Eleusis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Eleusis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inner Sight. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So stay with us and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today is glamour and illusion. And also today we'll be giving you a gift, and we'll be talking more about that a little bit later, so stay with us so you can hear how you can get that gift. And we're going to begin with our thought. Let reality govern my every thought, and truth be the master of my life. Now, with reality, so many questions occur to me. Is reality what I perceive through my five senses, and is truth what I perceive through my five senses? So I guess there's a lot of questions about that. Maybe we'll go to Sarah and Dale and start with them on that. Where does this ancient prayer, first of all, where does that ancient prayer come from? And what does it have to do with glamour and illusion?
I'm not sure where this prayer comes from. It's mentioned in the books of Alice Bailey, and all that she says is that it's a very ancient prayer. Probably it's an appeal that the human being has launched from time immemorial, when that person finds himself in a state of confusion, even despair and hopelessness, where you can't see your way out of a particular situation. That's very human, and we can assume that it's a state that goes back to the earliest experiences of humanity. It's an appeal for reality to govern our thinking. When we find ourselves in a state of extreme fear, for example, of even panic, where your thoughts just sort of swim around like in a tide pool, and you can't control them, and all kinds of images and fears and suspicions come into your mind, and you don't know what to think, and you don't know what reality is, then this appeal, this invocation, in a sense, let reality govern my every thought and truth be the master of my life, can have quite a calming and clarifying effect. I've worked with it, as many of us have, in times of panic or great fear. And there's something very powerful about these words, because it is such an ancient prayer, that it works its own magic. Have you found that to be so?
Well, yes. I mean, it's an invocation to the soul, really, for light, to bring more light into to the mind, and to your mind and my mind and everybody's mind, for a greater truth, because then you can find your way out of this morass, of this maze that you, or this darkness that you find yourself in. And that's the only way, really, is to call in those soul energies.
I think it's based on the recognition that what we are thinking, what is coming into our mind, isn't necessarily reality. You have to start with that awareness. Every thought that comes into your head doesn't necessarily come from a very high level. Fears and suspicions and hunches and suppositions can be not terribly high level at all, and they can be very far removed from reality. What we call our thinking is often more emoting, feeling, sensing. And this is where the glamour and illusion can have such a grip on us, and we won't even realize that our thinking is truly distorted. We say sometimes of people that he or she couldn't think her way out of a paper bag. Mm-hmm. And we can find ourselves in that state sometimes. If you really are bothered about something and really confused, if you sit down and you try to think it through, about identify the factors that you know are true, and identify the factors that are really only suppositions and hunches and suspicions, you might find that clarifying. I think that's a way of enacting this prayer, where you're identifying for yourself what you know to be reality. And you might be surprised. It isolates the few components that really are true, and everything else is just feeling and wondering.
You have to leave your mind open to...
I thought you were going to say you have to leave your mind. No, don't take it with you at all times.
There comes a point in your life where, yes, you do have to leave your mind, maybe. But at this stage, I think one should allow this reality to change, because, or a concept of reality to change, because there is no one reality. In fact, if we really consider the question of reality, then what we see in the world is totally unreal. It comprises of everything that they call the unreal, everything in the tangible physical world, because behind all of this physical world, there is what they call the reality with a capital R.
So we're making a mistake right from the beginning when we think that the world as we see and know and smell and taste it is not reality.
Yes, if we can begin to see it from the perspective of the soul and from the side of the spirit and on the inner side of life, because that's where reality really exists, the world we live in now, in this physical world that we're so identified with, is really just a very temporary and changeable state.
You could say it's also symbolic, isn't it? The world, the outer world, is symbolic of conditions that are much more subjective and hidden. And when we are in a situation that is confusing and distorted and unpleasant, if we think of it as symbolizing an internal state, that might help to clarify our thinking. It might help us identify how we had a hand in creating it.
And if you think that you have the final truth of anything, then it's probably a good possibility that you don't.
What?
You have to think about that and be open to it.
Well, it just reminds me of that thought that if you think you can, and if you think you can't, you're probably right also, which brings me to Buddha, who said your beliefs determine your reality. I guess there's so many levels of discussing reality. But how do we know if we are suffering from glamour or if our thinking is distorted by illusion?
Well, it's very difficult to identify glamour because it's so embedded in us, or we are embedded in it, most human beings. We can usually identify glamour and illusion in others because we're more detached from it and we can observe it and see it at work. But in ourselves, it's much more difficult to isolate and identify, but we're given a few guideposts in the writings of Alice Bailey to identify glamour. One is that is the expression of criticism when careful analysis of the situation would show that no criticism is really justified. And that is probably an indulgence that a lot of us find ourselves in, where we criticize without really having any basis or right for criticizing. That's an inlet for glamour. Another is criticism where there's no personal responsibility involved, where it isn't one's place or right or duty to be finding fault and pointing it out. And think how that would stop most of us from criticizing. There are times when people in positions of responsibility, when mothers and fathers and teachers and police officers and so on, bosses and so on, have to point out mistakes and wrongdoing, but most of the time it isn't your place or your right to criticize. Remaining silent would help. So that's another indication of glamour, where you think it's your right and your duty to criticize. Another is pride and satisfaction, particularly in one's spiritual status. If you find yourself feeling that you're quite superior and advanced, beware. And a fourth is any sense of superiority or of separation from humanity, that you're different, mm-hmm. that you're better, that you're apart from, that you're not like others. If you find yourself thinking like that, those are signs of glamour.
Those are the hardest to deal with because we're so deeply immersed in this state of consciousness. And I think it goes back to what we've mentioned before, that a lot depends on where our consciousness is focused. And if we tend to be focused in our emotional life, then that's going to color and it's going to condition all of the way that we see the world and the way that we interpret the world around us. Everything is going to be seen through this emotional rose-colored glasses kind of thing.
I think an interesting question, though, for people is how to know when you are being emotional and when you are thinking.
Well, it's hard to distinguish it mm-hmm. because the right now the consciousness is such that it's mind and emotion working together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good analogy. I mean, we have this idea that the symbol of the fog. We're walking around in a fog. Well, it's a good symbol because fog is air and moisture together, which mm-hmm. is a symbol of mind and emotion mixing
right.
together. And it's those two forces and energies that. It's so hard to distinguish and to separate.
And again, that prayer, let reality govern my every thought and truth be the master of my life, can help one to sort out emotion from real, clear thought. Mm-hmm. If you work with that on a regular basis.
And for those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. And our topic for today is glamour and illusion. And by the way, we mentioned earlier that we're offering you a gift, and all you have to do to acquire that gift is to call us on our toll-free number. And the gift is a very interesting pamphlet called Energy Follows Thought. And it contains the essence of this conversation and has a lot to do with how energy can have, thought can have a lot to do with combining with energy to create reality. And just give us a call and order that that pamphlet if you'd like it. It's called Energy Follows Thought. It's based on a book by Alice Bailey. The title of it is Glamour, a World Problem. So to order the pamphlet, Energy Follows Thought, give us a call on 1-866-695-8247. That's our toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. An easy way to remember it, 1-866-695-8247. N-Y Lucis. Think of New York Lucis. Lucis is L-U-C-I-S. And also at this time of the year, we hold our most important public meetings, the three spiritual festivals and the annual Arcane School Conference, all of which are coming up in March and April. You would be welcome to attend and meet other people who share an interest in this work and teaching, and please write or call for a meeting schedule and conference program. Most frequently asked question is Lucis Trust, is it a religion? No, we're not. If you attend these particular festivals, you'll meet people from all walks of life and many backgrounds. We consider ourselves a spiritual philosophy organization, so all are welcome. If you'd like to write to us, please do so. And remember, donations can be sent to Lucis Trust at 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And speaking of donations, all the work of the Lucis Trust, including this radio program, is funded by the voluntary donations of people like yourselves who support the goals of the Lucis Trust. We're not endowed, nor do we have a wealthy benefactor who helps to pay for this program. We depend on the donations, large and small, of individuals, so please give if you want these programs to continue on the air.
Could I interject a little comment mm-hmm. here?
Sure.
If any of the listeners, any of you people out there would like to come to any of our meetings, why, be sure to come up and introduce yourself, because Sarah and I will be there. And we'd like to hear from you, and we'd like to meet you. So if you do attend the meetings, why, come up and say hello.
Yeah, we've had a lot of our radio listeners join those meetings, and don't be a stranger. You're all welcome. So once again, for that pamphlet, Energy Follows Thought, you can give us a call at the toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247, or 1-866-NY-LUCIS, and we'll be happy to send it out to you free of charge. What are some of the familiar glamours, and are they related to the Hollywood type of glamour?
Yes and no. When I think of Hollywood glamour, I think of Fredericks of Hollywood. Those people in our audience who might know that line of clothing will get a pretty good idea of the glamour that surrounds the female image. It's hilarious, and it's defeating to every young girl that thinks that's the image she should grow up to become. It doesn't happen. And we have a society of girls who are increasingly anorexic and bulimic because they think they're all supposed to look like Barbie. Mm-hmm. So the Hollywood glamour does have a kind of a vicious shadow side to it of empty beauty that is a kind of a... sword held over the heads of a lot of people who don't measure up to that physical standard. But there's another element of glamour that's given in the books of Alice Bailey that pertains more to the spiritual consciousness. There's a lot of glamour associated with spiritual awakening. And it can express itself in the most unusual ways. One of the classic examples of glamour on the spiritual path is the world savior complex, or the messianic complex, one who thinks he or she is here to save the world. And I used to work in the library at the Lucis Trust, and several times people came in who told me, I shouldn't laugh because they were serious. They told me quite frankly that they were Christ. Mm-hmm. And they believed it. And these were people who were not crazy, but they were obviously a little bit devoid of a sense of proportion and balance, because I'm pretty sure that, well, I mean, Christ exists in all of us, yes, the Christ principle, but they thought, no, they were the representative of that great consciousness. So the messianic complex is one. Another is the service complex, that you have to sacrifice your life in a kind of a hair shirt way to please God, when in fact he wants us to live our lives as fully as possible. What are some other examples?
Well, it's related to that. There's the glamour of destiny. That's one of the, that's sort of similar to what you were just referring to, the one feels that he is the Christ, this is his destiny for his life, and he should go around the world and proclaim. And
chosen that, for a special task.
Yeah, this is my destiny, and this is my my karma, my dharma, whatever you want to call it. And so one becomes, his whole world is narrowed down to that little image of himself. And So that can be very destructive, glamour to oneself and to those people around him. Mm-hmm. There's the glamour, similar to this, the glamour of duty. I feel that it's my duty to carry on, and this tends to get overemphasized, and the sense of responsibility of carrying out this duty, perhaps.
And that it's all on your shoulders, rather than seeing the group aspect of the correction of human problems.
And the glamour of devotion. This leads to an undue stimulation of the astral nature. And
it would sacrifice everyone and everything in its path.
And one's under this glamour sees only one idea and one person and one authority and one aspect of the truth. And it tends to feed fanaticism and spiritual pride.
That's more in the realm of illusion, isn't it? The idée fixe, the correct but incomplete point of view. It's right in its own context, but it doesn't speak for the whole. It doesn't include the whole. That qualifies the thinking of most many intelligent people.
And then there is also the glamour of ambition. Now, we may not think that ambition is a glamour, because it's very, very common, and it's accepted characteristic in a lot of people to be ambitious, to get ahead. That's what you have to do. You have to be ambitious. But it can lead one onto a down the wrong path.
Well, I don't, yeah. Yes and no. I mean, I think everybody who tries to develop spiritually, to take themselves in hand, is driven by a certain amount of ambition. They want to grow. They want to become more than what they presently are. So it's probably the fire under us that propels us out of our self, our inertia and our self infatuation. But it can get out of hand, yes.
Yes, if ambition is so powerful that you just knock down everybody in your path to get to your objective, then then you're incurring more karma than is good.
Yeah, there's a comment in the writings of Alice Bailey about how to counteract this kind of glamour on the spiritual path, and she says, emphasize the spontaneity of the soul. And don't spoil it with the glamour of a selfish aspiration or self-centeredness or self-immolation that says I have to die for the Lord, the kind of hair-shirt mentality, or the aggressiveness of spiritual ambition or the self-assertiveness in spiritual work. All of this evaporates when you just let in the light and love of the soul to guide you. You don't have to force yourself so hard. I think that's what she's saying. Let the soul do its magical work without forcing it. So many people think of the spiritual path as a kind of a horse race. And they've got to win that race at all costs, and they become kind of competitive and hard on themselves if they aren't doing, growing, expanding in consciousness in the way they think they should.
Yes, I think the in the religious communities they've gone through this experience of the glamour of the fanatic and self-flagellation and self-denial and all of that. Maybe it has some purpose, but I think it can go overboard, and it defeats its purpose. Mm-hmm. After a while. It gets so fanatical.
Sarah, you repeatedly mentioned Alice Bailey. Alice Bailey is the founder of the Lucis Trust organization, and she's written 24 volumes of literature. And Lucis Trust sponsors the show Inner Sight, and all of the dialogue that you hear on the show emanates from the works of Alice Bailey, from the 24 volumes of literature. How can illusion and glamour be overcome?
There's a book that Alice Bailey wrote called Glamour, a World Problem, that really goes into the problem in detail and gives instructions for meditation on eradicating glamour. But some of the basic ideas in her writings suggest that we should study the life of Buddha and Christ for examples of techniques that will free us from glamour and illusion. For example, Christ, when he was tempted in the wilderness, which is told about in the New Testament, he was given three temptations. Each one of them he met with the enunciation of a clear-cut spiritual principle. Rather than indulging in endless arguments and back-and-forth dialogue, he defined a clear spiritual principle to dispel each temptation. And I think that's interesting because it lets in the light of reality of the mind in a clear, decisive way, rather than the fog of too much analysis, too much back-and-forth of the analytical mind. The Buddha taught that to overcome glamour, you have to free yourself from attachment to all things, free yourself from desire. His whole life message was that desire is an endless pull that keeps one imprisoned in suffering, and that the only release from this is detachment. And he believed that every human being has the capacity to liberate himself. His final words in his last sermon were, "Be a lamp unto your own feet. Shine your own soul light on your path. You can do it," bringing in the light of the mind. Christ taught that the liberation from glamour was through love. He said, "Love one another as I have loved you." This is the release from glamour.
And as we move forward in consciousness, and where the mind begins to act more in a dominant way, and we begin to live through the mind, then the factor of illusion kind of takes over from glamour, or it begins to rise above the glamour, and we get caught up in these illusions, illusory ideas. And this is the kind of the product of the intellect, one of the characteristics of the over-intellectual, that will be so caught up in ideas and to think that these ideas are the truth and reality. And there is a higher source. You were talking about the light of the soul, and it's more of that light from the intuitive level, which is actually of a higher, more deeper source than actually the mind. And that's what rids us of the illusions of the mind. It's the intuitive, the intuition.
That's why the practice of meditation is so important, because for most people that access to the intuition is developed only through meditation. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes training, a lot of training, a lot of effort. But you're right, that's our escape from illusion. The development of the intuition. That's why meditation practice is always emphasized in spiritual teachings. There are many methods, but if you're interested in attaining this liberation, investigate meditation and choose one method that seems to work for you.
Remember that we depend on the donations, large and small, of individuals like yourselves, so please give if you want these programs to continue on the air. Donations can be sent to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. And if you want that gift that we're sending you out, give us a call on our toll-free number, and we'll be happy to send it to you. Call 1-866-695-8247, the easy way, 1-866-NY-LUCIS, think of New York Lucis. That's about all the time we have for our discussion today. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.